Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us to the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct the hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, it's time to rethink your level A protection. Multi-threat suits made of lightweight Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric are part of the most functional non-encapsulated level A ensembles that bring an essential modernization to hazmat PPE. Certified NFPA 1994 Class 1 suits with Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric offer unencumbered movement, increased range of motion, improved peripheral visibility, excellent dexterity, and reduced heat stress so you can stay engaged longer. You can learn more at GoreTexProfessional.com. Let's get to the show.
Hi.
We're up?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I still show us doing a countdown.
You're looking at the live thing and it's 50 seconds behind.
Okay. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Hazmat Guys. I usually cue my start based upon the visuals that are in front of me, and it's frozen, so it is what it is. Today we're talking about crypto. Oh, not crypto. Cryo.
Dude, that would be so funny if we actually did that. We talk about something that has nothing to do with anything we have any idea about.
Nothing. That would be absolutely phenomenal.
All right. Let me get the what's coming up kind of thing out of the way. If you don't know, the 34th Annual Midwest Hazmat Conference will be presented virtually starting on May 6th. Which is coming up very soon. It's like a week away.
Right.
All the presentation will be available on demand for the entire month, so you can watch them whenever you want, as many times as you want. The fee is only $100 for 50 presentations with 75 plus hours of first-class training by me and you, Mike and Bob, the top hazmat instructors in the country, and the other guys. And it's eligible for HMEP 80-20 grant funding. You only have to pay $20. So you can download the conference brochure and register at emorysafety.com. And if you have a conference in your area that you want to mention the conference, even if we're not even speaking there, contact Kosh, COSCH, at thehazmatguys.com for more information. And this gets you here and on the newsletter and at a few other places for good measure. There's also Cold Zone. That's May 11th. Baltimore, June 8th. We got a ton of presentations in that one.
Oh, yeah.
Virginia was still working on, which is September 13th. And I just got off the phone with Travis, September 20th for Massachusetts. And that one's going to be, I think that's like basically the end of the year.
Yeah, that wraps up our year.
Yeah.
But
so
going off script for a moment, talk about the Rick Emery's show. His conference, I can pretty much assure you that barring any other weirdness, next year's will be live. If you are nowhere near the Midwest Conference and it's not something that you attend regularly, or you don't go to conferences regularly, you know, for travel, for whatever, this is an amazing opportunity to sit in front of literally world-class instructors in the comfort of your own home. And I cannot recommend signing up for this a month enough, because you have access to so much information for such a huge period of time.
Yeah.
So it's more than just a read. Do it.
Yeah. And one last thing, if you don't know about it, the FDNY Hazmat Company won. Those lads over there, their shirt locker is open. You can go to FDNYHazmat1.com and get all the coolest swag that all those cool kids are wearing. And I'm hoping they give us one for free, but I have a feeling they will not be.
I know the combo to the locker we can get in.
Oh, they changed it. It's now a key.
Did they?
Yeah.
Is it really?
There was too much pilfering.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, go figure.
Wow. To each his own.
To each his own.
Anywho, let's talk about some cryo. Let's get into this, man.
Yeah, so we've got some tips on responding to cryogenic emergencies, and I don't know what episode this is.
36.
We're a third of the way to
1,000.
Will we be alive? Let's see. If it took 4 years to get 5 years to get here,
seven.
Wow.
We started in November of 2015.
Did we really?
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder I'm.
I still have the first episode.
Yeah, of course. That was the most awkward thing in the world. Hey, everybody. I just tell you that from that, like the amount of time that was spent like cutting out every noise that we made that we didn't like, it was unbelievable.
Hours.
It was really like we were looking for glitches in audio signatures and just cutting them out. It was crazy. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So responding to cryogenics, as much as I would love to say that this is something that is a low frequency event, I have to tell you that with all of the cryogenics that are out there, this is something that I think as all of this equipment that is out there starts to get older and older and older, people are going to be responding to more and more cryogenic emergencies as time goes on. It's only the past 5 years that CO2 liquid form has really started to come out. And we thought it would be a good idea just to give some tips on responding to these cryogenic emergencies. So we're going to start off with where we should start off every time we're dealing with a chemical, whether we've done the chemical a million times or this is our first time responding to that. And that is chemical and physical properties. And we always start off with the chemical or the group of chemicals and learn about them first. We always want to develop a really robust understanding of that specific chemical's chemical and physical properties. That is by far the first thing we want to do.
Yeah. And when it comes specifically to cryogenics, we have a whole separate category of harm that comes from the fact that it is, by definition, a cryogenic liquid, right? We could say it is a liquid, which we'll come back around to because it's not truly a liquid, but whatever. And we'll get into that in a moment. But first, I want to emphasize that the cryogenic harm, the top layer of that harm little cake that we have here, there are reasons that the cryos are so dangerous, but we can't underestimate all of the chemical in and of itself. So while it is extraordinarily important to keep all of the cryo in mind when you're responding, we cannot forget the way that the material would normally reach out and hurt us if it isn't in a cryogenic state. Now, please explain what the hell I just talked about.
Well, it's easy, right? Like we have a tendency to just deal with the cryogenic harm and forget about the chemical in and of itself.
Yes.
So with the understanding of that in mind, right, with moving on, right, because we're not talking about chemical physical properties here, but we want to make sure that you definitely understand chemical and physical properties. We still have to learn about the individual chemicals and what you're working with. Now we can talk about the cryogenics as a whole. And we define cryogenics as something that is really, really cold liquid. These liquids tend to be gases at atmospheric temperatures and pressures. They've been chilled down to temperatures around minus 150 Celsius, which is minus 238 Fahrenheit for those that are still using a barbaric system of measurements, all the way down to absolute zero, which is minus 273 degrees Celsius. So pretty wide range, but very, very cold.
Now, you might be saying to yourself, why do this? Why take something that is a gas and make it a liquid? And it all comes down to money. That's what everything comes down to, right? Everything comes down to money. And the simple answer is it leads us into the first way that the cryogenics can harm us, and they do it for the economics of delivery and storage. It can take an enormous amount of volume, right, of container volume in order to store or transport this stuff. So if I chill it, and it becomes a liquid in general, with water being one of the exceptions, things get smaller, right? And so it's going to take up 500 to 1,000 times less space. So if I had 1,000 liters of gas and I chill it down, that means it's going to be 1 liter of transported liquid. And that savings is in space and in money and fuel.
Yeah, and so many other with things, but that tremendous savings in space becomes a real detriment to us if that liquid wants to turn back into a gas. And it means that cryogenics can very rapidly engulf us in a way that we would not normally see, even on a compressed gas leak.
Right. And then this is when your knowing and understanding of the harm of the chemical becomes really vitally important. Because you can go from a state of relative safety, something that is chilled in its right container, in its right mode, I would say, right? And then all of a sudden, whether intentional or unintentional, something accidentally changes, right? And now you're engulfed by a hazardous materials within seconds, and it's like all around you. And one of the best examples of this would be liquid oxygen.
Yeah. And if we look back at the chemical and physical properties of liquid oxygen, we're going to find out that liquid oxygen is, in fact, an oxidizer. And while not flammable in and of itself, oxygen supports combustion and is going to cause things that would ordinarily not burn to burn extraordinarily rapidly and to the fullest extent possible. I actually almost burnt down a hotel with this demonstration, but, you know, hey, they still invite us back. We actually have a demonstration in which we burn bunker gear in an oxygen-enriched environment, and it, literally a strip of bunker gear within a minute is completely vaporized, just gone.
The hipsters pay for this. They go to those oxygen therapy places, and what a bunch of clowns. Anyway, it's the reason that it's going to lead us to our first tip when responding to cryogenics, even if you're dealing with a minor leak. A minor leak. And I say that relative because what is a minor leak? It's kind of a, you know.
It's a leak under 18 years of age.
Of course. And all, as always, we are professionals. Everybody that's listening to this, I don't care what level of your instructor is you will, if you're metering or you're at a scene, you are wearing your SCBA. Your face piece is on. I know it's something we don't always suggest to do. We're not officials in any way, but officially, if your meter is on, your mask is on. But let's talk about the real world, where a lot of times our meters are going to drive our PPE selection. We say this over and over and over. But this is an instance where things can change so rapidly, the meter may not even catch up.
Yeah.
Right? It may overwhelm you before you even take the thought of, holy crap, I need to put my SCBA on, and then boom, you're done, right? So when you have a substance that can displace oxygen as rapidly as a cryogenic, you may have seriously one breath before it's over.
Yeah. And if there's a popping sound involved and you are like suddenly jump and you inhale, like, oh,
oh, that's it. Oh,
that's it. You're done.
I hope it's helium, so at least it's a funny way to go.
Help me. You sound like the witch from The Wizard of Oz melting.
Oh, that's so funny. I'd laugh.
Oh my God. What a horrible radio transmission that would be.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. The news is just saying in his last communication, let's play it on the air. Oh, and the family's like, can you please not? God. Don't play that anymore.
Yeah, don't, please, please. It's not, we don't need to listen to that. And this is because when things go wrong, they go wrong catastrophically and quickly. And it's not going to happen every time, but the chances are significant that it could happen. And you, in this instance, you really need to be prepared for the worst case scenario. If you didn't hear yet, we are transitioning to a new format that is going to give you, the listener, even more content.
Yeah, for example, in our technician and specialist levels, we are adding even more video content, access to our entire show catalog, and even access to a monthly small group Q&A session to answer any questions that come up, as well as so much more.
All of this for less than a cup of coffee that you premium snobs like to drink for the entire month of access.
This is the stuff that you've been asking for. So take a look at what we can do to take you to the next level of the Hazmat.
Go to our website, thehazmatguys.com. You can sign up for our premium tiers that will give you even more Hazmat goodness.
And you know what the funny thing is, and this is kind of like a side note, but this has happened to us a couple of times, is that when people think of this cryogenic release and there's going to be displacement, they think of an actual visual cloud. That is not always true. When you see an actual physical cloud, what you're seeing is that rapid phase change of the cryogenic liquid flashing to a gas and becoming so freaking cold, it's actually freezing the humidity in the air, and you're seeing that. And so can you have a cryogenic leak that is substantial enough to push the oxygen away and cause you harm without actually seeing anything? And the answer is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that in small leaks of these containers in basements. You know, there is no cloud in these small leaks because, you know, it's not releasing, or it's changing into the gas phase inside the container, or to the container, or there's not a lot coming out, so it's not creating this massive plume that we would normally see.
Right. So this recommendation of put on your SCBA should be said to all incoming units, either stage far enough away that you're not impacted, or put it on even if you don't think it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess we should specify SCBA, because this isn't a time that you can use a PAPR or an APR or an N95 or a cloth mask, you know, whatever you got floating around in your pocket, because of the oxygen deprivation. So let's go and switch gears to first aid, right? When we are responding to cryogenic emergencies, literally, like, as we start responding, one of the first things we really need to think about is the first aid. And that can be difficult because as HAZMAT technicians, we are sometimes really focused on mitigation, and we totally forget about the life safety aspect that's involved.
Good point. You know what?
You're drinking from a I Make Hazmat Sexy Cup. Where would somebody be able to get one of those?
It's so funny you should say that. You can go on the website, go to the store, the hazmatguys.com/store, and beside yourself picking yourself up a specialist level so you can see this whole thing live, you can get one of these cool cups that is so icy cold, almost cryogenic.
Almost cryogenic. So that we'll get into if you were to swallow that, we could get into the first aid of what to do.
What a segue. We are getting good at this. All right. So the life safety is on two different fronts, right? The first one is going to be whoever the civilian is that has been injured during this incident. There's a reason why you're coming. And then it's first responders. Right. So whether it's be the technician that's going to mitigate a situation, or the first two units that have tried their own to mitigate or exclude, or you know, and they've been hurt in the process. Let's take a little bit look at what kind of first aid should be given to the first people that are exposed to a cryogenic.
Yeah, and let's not forget that as the hazmat technician, we have a responsibility to push this information on, even if we're not on scene. Literally, I can't tell you how many times we've had to deliver first aid via the phone to the first two units who are not trained in hazmat. And we're lucky enough where we work to have technician-level EMS, but they're not every ambulance. They're scattered throughout the city. So it's entirely possible that our operations level firefighters and EMS are going to be there first. So being able to understand the first aid and then also be able to explain to somebody how to perform that first aid is they're equally vitally important.
Now, with that, now you got to explain. The major two hazards of this thing is going to be the asphyxiant, the crowding out of oxygen, and then the super cold. And so what we want to do, one of the first things we want to do is remove the clothing that may restrict the circulation to that frozen area or that chilled or frostbit, whatever. But at the same time, we need to remember that we don't want to take clothing off that is frozen to the skin. Right. At that point, you might want to consider just kind of like chopping around it with some scissors and,
right.
and kind of leaving that there, because we only want to remove the unaffected articles of clothing, and only if we absolutely must try to remove the clothing that has frozen to the skin. We basically take giant chunks of frozen tissues off the person, and that's not what we're looking for, because you're removing skin.
Yeah.
You know,
or chunks of whatever. It's frozen down to
hair. It could be hair. I don't know.
In the same kind of vein, we don't want to use safety showers, eye wash fountains, or any other source of water. And this is really, if you think about it, counterintuitive to how we operate as first responders, because we are so used to the idea that if you've been doused in chemical, you do an emergency decon to get that chemical off of you. But if you actually sit and you actually think about the reason behind what we are doing, you would see that there's no need for an emergency decon here, because we're dealing with really cold liquids that want to be gases at room temperature. Dude, that thing is going, I don't care how close you are to the incident, that thing is going to evaporate by the time you even get there. And chances are the chemical is totally gone and no longer in the liquid phase. So what we're actually dealing with when we're dealing with victims is going to be that frostbite and frozen tissue.
If you tell me, hey, set up a decon line, we got a cryogenic thing, I'm like, thank God. Slam dunk. Like, this is just stand there with your hands in your pockets, because there's nothing to do.
Nothing. You know,
the only thing is maybe using like an eye wash, right? Well, even an eye wash or an emergency decon, because basically you could power wash the frozen tissue right off the person.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know, I don't know if I could really hose somebody off and a large chunk of flesh just comes flying off their body. I'll try not to laugh or stare in amazement or something that you're standing there, but like,
yeah, I think
I wouldn't even notice it.
I think I would giggle. I'd be like, dude, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
You got a dart in your neck.
If the showers are no good and the eye wash is no good, don't rub frozen parts. All right. This may seem like a great idea. We use it to warm up our hands. We use it to warm up our feet. But you're basically going to be left with little balls of flesh all over the place. It's the same basic concept. Kind of what would happen. I don't know if it was just me. If I would pour like glue in school all over my hand, wait for it to dry, and then like rub it and peel it off. And that's kind of what would happen if you were to try to warm up somebody's body part that has frozen tissue to it. You just kind of end up with these cute little flesh balls.
Yeah. And you want to, again, this is going to be a little bit difficult to do on scene, but you want to try to get the affected body part in warm water bath, which is something that's less than 105 degrees Fahrenheit. That is kind of hot, man. Like, a hot tub maxes out at like 103, and there are some spicy hot tubs out there. This is above hot tub. So be careful with this one, but you want to try to get the entire victim warmed up. Supportive treatment for shock should be provided as well.
Yeah. So the frozen tissue that we're specifically talking about warming up, it's going to be completely painless, right? They're not going to be like, oh my God, this hurts so bad. It's going to appear very, very waxy. Medical attention is immediately necessary. And it's going to take about 15 minutes to an hour to really like thaw out that chunk of steak. Literally, you could think of it like pulling out a chunk of steak from the freezer. How long does that take to defrost? And you should continue to do it until that skin that was frozen now turns pink or red. That way, you know, it's completely thawed out.
Right. And if there's been extensive body exposure to cryogenic temperatures, such as the general body temperature is depressed, the patient must be rewarmed without delay. The patient should be placed in a bath of warm water at a temperature between 40 and 42 degrees Celsius or 104 to 108 Fahrenheit. And it's important that the mixture of the temperature of the bath is maintained at a level of not less than 40 degrees Celsius to maximize the rate of rewarming.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine being frozen and then dipped in 104 degree.
Ooh, that's gonna be hot, man.
And in the absence of a facility to treat the patient, care should be taken to significantly warm up the atmosphere, preferably around 22 degrees Celsius. And I don't know off the top of my head what that is in Fahrenheit. And we want to keep them rested, slightly covered, one or two blankets until recovery is complete.
And shock may occur during the rewarming process. Not to get too nerded out with this, but you know, the blood vessels are kind of constricted, and then all of a sudden you're warming them up and they open. And so when you open, you increase the volume in the body, your blood pressure drops to zero and you fall out.
Fall out. She didn't take her peanut butter balls. If you have significant tissue that's frozen and you're defrosting, you have to remember that you're going to go from that waxy to that red. But you're also, you know, there's been a lot of vascular damage. There's going to be a lot of permeability of fluids inside the area, a lot of edema. As it starts to defrost, that's when the tissue is going to start to become painful. It's going to start to swell. Infection is going to be able to set in. So you really want the thawing process to be as clean as possible. And again, as you're going through, you want to treat for the shock, and you want to do what you can to prevent infection. So clean water, preferably. I don't know. I honestly can't see how in the field we're going to do that. Hey, listen, I guess somebody's out in the Midwest and they're 10 hours away from a good hospital. They got to do what they got to do.
That would make sense because, you know, you want to cover the area with dry, sterile dressings with large, bulky, protective clothing coverings as well.
Yeah. And for God's sakes, last tip when it comes to first aid, whatever you do, don't apply ointment to the area. I swear to God, I once had a woman that had regular, normal steam burns on her hand. And we walked in and you could hear her screaming from the road. And we were like, what happened? She's like, I got burnt and I wanted to cool the burn, so I put Icy Hot on it. And we were like, okay.
I have a couple of things for, or at least one thing for premium.
All right. Sounds good. We are going to stop here. And next week, we're going to pick up on choosing the proper PPE for cryogenics.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.